Welcome to South End Supporters, a St. Louis City SC podcast brought to you by RPR Renovations and Postal Coffee Company. David Heck alongside Eric Cole. Eric, it's another midweek episode for us. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but here we are back at it one more time with a Friday morning drop.
I mean, a lot of soccer and a lot of David Heck alongside the other table for me is not a bad thing. I just wish it was on better circumstances.
Better circumstances. And I appreciate that, Eric. It means a lot to me because I too believe it's a good thing for me looking across the table at you as well. However, this may be the last one of these we do for a little bit, as City has been bounced out of the CONCACAF Champions Cup, unfortunately, after a 1-0 defeat. They lose 2-2 on aggregates with the away goal playing a deciding factor in there for Houston. They lose Tuesday night.
Yeah, an empty Tuesday night too, I might add. That place was, I don't think people got their times right on what time the game started, because that place was pretty empty. So, yeah, unfortunately, midweek. I mean, who knows how to look at this anymore? Fortunately, unfortunately, no midweek games, I think, until like mid-May or something like that. And so, you know, no excuses anymore going from here on out as far as, you know, schedule congestion or fatigue or resting or rotation players for just that reason. So whether you want to look at this as a negative, a positive, I don't know, but from here on out, no more excuses, at least.
The City fan page would think it was overwhelmingly negative that there's no more midweek soccer or cup soccer.
I mean, obviously I agree.
Yeah, I know. And I want to dive into it a little bit, because I think that's been the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around, is I think I have a hard time, because I'm a City fan that loves the MLS and that competition. I'm an American sports fan, right? Like, we don't follow these midseason tournaments. I tried watching the NBA's midseason tournament this year. I didn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, it just was like a made up thing that, you know, that Silver decided to run with. Obviously the Champions Cup has more cachet than that, and has been around a lot longer than that, as the U.S. Open Cup has as well over here in the States. But it is new to St. Louis, relatively, right? It's the first time we've ever been in it before, and I think that casual observers just don't have a lot of interest in it, which is why you see the crowd the way things were probably in Houston.
Yeah, I'd say, if you're a casual fan, to you, it's confusing. You don't understand it. To you, it's probably, yeah, at the end of the day, you're looking for, we won the championship of the league. You're not, other people probably don't understand, you know, how prestigious some of the winning these other tournaments can be. And especially when it comes to like Champions Cup or Champions League, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's tough to qualify for. And one thing that I saw kind of throughout that I kind of agree with is, I wish we almost would have prioritized that game being a knockout game as well, also being in a better position going into the game, just shoring things up, and look to rotate on this weekend. Because, you know, with this tournament, you know, you're knocked out and you're done. Whereas the league, you know, you drop a game, drop points here or there, you still have, you know, 36 more to make up, or excuse me, 32 more to make up and kind of, you know, get things going. So I understand, as somebody new to the league and not understanding or just getting familiar with it, how it can seem that way. But when you realize how difficult it is just to qualify for this, I mean, it's kind of like one of those wonders, like, man, who knows when we could be back here.
Yeah, I think that it's not just the fans' fault, though. I think it's the coverage of its fault.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you've got two central time zone teams playing at 9:30 on a Tuesday night.
And I saw that kind of league-wide, people kind of wondering that, not just, you know, us as fans or even Houston's fans. I mean, it was kind of across the board, people kind of wondering why was that chosen. And I almost feel like, I mean, I could be way off on this, but there was a game last year, I remember, it was the same situation. There was like two central time zone teams, and we had a 9:30 game, and I think it was at City Park. And I remember we kept wondering, is the league kind of almost taking advantage of knowing City's fandom, and they know that we're going to be there,
it was the playoff game, one of the playoff games against
KC,
I believe.
And so it's just kind of this you know, why? Explain it to me why. I think they should have also offered many different streaming options or been more forefront to it, because even you could tell City was kind of scrambling on, you can watch it here if you do this or that. I just always think there should be like a backup plan in case what happens that night did happen. And I just think they could have maybe, I would like at the beginning of the year, all these different leagues and in tournament stuff, maybe give a little brief history lesson on why these things are so important. You know, obviously the Leagues Cup, they can't do that because there is no real history. But like the U.S. Open Cup, we're seeing a big, you know, dilemma right now with the U.S. Open Cup. Explain the history to these new fans and explain why it is so important that
or go back,
City
back
is
and
involved.
Listen to the South and Supporter episode
or do
from
that,
last year,
you know,
where
I mean,
we broke it down.
Exactly. I mean, I think just educating those casuals and maybe enlightening them to how difficult some of these tournaments are, maybe they would realize that importance of this tournament and get that excitement for these things going forward.
Yeah, I agree with that to an extent, but the other problem is, and we'll talk about the lineup that was trotted out there, but when you see that, if you're already going into it thinking, well, you know, I don't necessarily, like, yeah, I want them to do well, sure, it'd be fine if they went on to the next round. In the back of your mind, you're like, well, then you've got more, you know, matches. It's going to take away from potentially getting guys rest for the MLS season. Is that a good idea? You know, I don't know. Is it good or bad?
Or
but,
even maybe another thing that, you know, I saw kind of throughout the socials is the first thing that, and Carnot kind of got harped on a bit last year, this is if he throws out a team like that, and I'm not trying to knock anybody on there, but I think you would look at that first lineup and think, you know, that's a lot of rotation. There's not a lot of regular starters in there. Your first thought is, oh, maybe they're not taking it.
This
as
is my so this is the
well.
This is the point that I was getting at, is that when you're already thinking this way, and then the manager trots out the lineup that he trotted out, it's hard not to view this as a glorified exhibition match.
You're right.
I mean, exactly. It's like, you know, if it's that important, why don't you prioritize it?
And especially to a casual,
right?
Know, somebody who is just kind of, maybe this is somebody's first year kind of paying attention because they are, you know, coming off the hype that we had last year. And they look at this game and they've learned all the players and they've learned who the regulars are and maybe who of our better players are. And you look at, you know, that was something I kind of had a gripe on last year, is when we did rotation, it was like a full 11 rotation. And we kind of saw it that night. It's hard to kind of feel like there's any cohesion within the team and just chemistry when every week it's a dramatic overhaul. But if you're a new fan tuning into that, yeah, your first thought probably is, oh, this isn't that important. We got a lot of backup guys in there. And then here we are, you know, people who do pay attention thinking, Jesus, guys, this is a knockout stage. And we said straight from the get-go on the last episode, the last thing we want to do is just go in there and try and park the bus and get out of there with the result. You should be going in there looking for a win, looking for a result, and taking it.
Yeah.
And not just trying to survive. And so I think that was kind of my issue with the starting 11, is it just kind of felt, and especially with all our defensive woes, the last thing you want to do is just invite more pressure onto it.
Yeah, they absorbed a lot of it, it seemed like. That lineup we talked about, Akil Watts, Joachim Nielsen, Mike Wenzel, we'll talk a lot about him. You know, the announcer kept saying Wetzel.
It's that German.
Yeah. He's from State College, Pennsylvania, but perhaps it's some sort of a heritage there. Wetzel,
I mean,
I'm
even
not sure.
At the same time, when I text you or any of my buddies, Berkey or Leuven, I throw that umlaut on.
You
got to
put that
umlaut,
yeah. Nowitzki joined them on the back line. You had Kojima, Vasilev, Durkin, and Ostrak in the middle, Klaus and Adeniran up top. So a traditional standard maybe for them, a 4-4-2 like they've ran a lot of last year. I know your thoughts on the lineup. Where did you think they could have potentially gone in a different spot, and what did you like about it?
So my issue with looking at that lineup is, first thing when I first saw it is, who's going to be our leader on the field? You typically look at like a Parker or even Yarrow, Leuven in the midfield, somebody with experience, somebody who's going to kind of, when things are going awry, keep things calm and, you know, kind of communicate with the team out there and kind of help make changes or look to make those changes. Or when things are up, making sure we're staying humble and still staying focused on task. And when you look at it, you know, obviously Berkey has that, but he's kind of, like we talked about last week, limited being a goalie. Nowitzki's got experience, but he's not really a regular anymore. Vetzel, that was his, you know, he just got called up that day. Nielsen, he missed most of last season, so he's still just trying to get familiar with the team himself. Watts spent most of last year on City 2. He's, you know, kind of in and out as well. Durkin's new to the team. Kojima's new to the team. Indy, while he's been around with the team and everything, he doesn't necessarily scream leader to me, and I'm not trying to knock Indy on that. I think there should only be maybe one or two on the field at a time. Oshrock, same kind of deal. Klaus, you would maybe think it would be that, but as the game went on, you saw Klaus's frustration kicking in because he just wasn't being supplied the ball. And then Sam, he seems more a little bit on the quieter side and just lets his feet do the talking on the field. While he does express himself sometimes, I don't know if leader would be the term that agreed. Would jump out to me. And that's not a knock on anybody. I mean, like I said,
you don't have to be a leader.
No, not at all. And that doesn't also mean your best player is right. your leader either. But so that was just my issue. And as we saw, you know, kind of throughout the whole game, when things were kind of going just south, there was nobody out there. I know it was weird kind of seeing Vensel kind of like be that guy who was kind of rallying the team, yelling at the guys, which he should as a center back. But man, for a guy who got called up that day, that's a big ask.
Only 22 years old as well.
As well, yeah. So while I understand, you know, maybe a little rotation here, I just had an issue with, you know, Sam and Klaus being our only kind of regulars up top. And also as the game went on, I kind of question, is our best lineup going to be with those two in it? Because they are such yin and yang that when a game is going awry and we have no sort of offensive buildup or no sort of offensive cohesion, can those two yin and yang style work together?
I get asked all the time where the best place is to watch City games, and the answer is always the same. It's Felix's Pizza Pub, and it's not even close. Not only can you watch every single home and away City game surrounded by fans, but you can do it while enjoying the best pizza in the area. Now, I like the Murphy Pie, which is chicken, wing sauce, green onions, blue cheese, and jalapeno ranch. But maybe that's not your thing. Maybe you're more of a fan of a traditional pizza. Then check out the Dogtown with Italian sausage, pepperoni, and pepper bacon. Or maybe you're like my partner Eric over here and you like a little bit of both. It doesn't matter what your tastes are because you can order any of the pizzas at Felix's by the slice. But it is no ordinary slice. Felix's offers the largest slice you are going to find anywhere in St. Louis. So mix and match. Try different pizzas. Just make sure to save room for their award-winning double trashed wings in buffalo, jalapeno ranch, or Thai chili. And if you're looking for something to do during the week, head to Felix's every Tuesday night for Stoned Trivia to test your knowledge in the most fun bar trivia around. Even if you're not a trivia buff, you can still win great prizes, so show up at 7 and be ready to have some fun. It's Felix's Pizza Pub, located at 6401 Clayton Avenue in Dogtown, and check them out online at Felix's Dogtown. So it's a good point, and I've seen it talked a lot about on the socials. The issue with it is that if you weren't going to put... There is no other striker right now, right? I mean, like, you could go Nokfi Thorason, I suppose, but he has not really impressed to this point either. You could go with... you could play AZ or Celio, I suppose. Celio played up top with, I think it was Sam, in the game against Real Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. But those two are kind of like more, I feel like, role players as well. You can kind of plug them in different places. A lot of high energy, too. I don't even like starting those guys. I like bringing them in late, right. You know, to be able to run against tired legs because they're so explosive. But when you think about those two guys, that's a lot of, I'm not saying it's a lot of ego, but I'm saying that, you know, on paper, it's a lot of potential skill to think, well, we're only going to play one of those guys, you know, and we're going to have the other one sitting, essentially. Like, how do you manage that rotation with two strikers like that?
Well, also, my issue that I've been debating with myself right now is because I've been trying to think of what starting lineup we go to. And I do think, again, we go back to that 4-2-3-1 with the solo striker up top. But my debate has been, you know, you look right now, and where Sam's been really strong is actually coming off the bench because he does, he's running, he's got that speed and that size, and what's better to exploit tired legs going into a second half than that big energy coming off the bench? But at the same time, he's in form right now. So it's also like, how do you go to Sam and be like, you know, we're going to sit you
right
and start Klaus? Whereas if you really think about it, though, that's what makes the most sense right now, is starting Klaus in that solo position, kind of having him, he needs to just, and it's not, I don't think it's necessarily Klaus' fault. I think our midfield has really struggled as far as interlinking any sort of play with him. Now, I'm not saying he's been, you know, stellar, but at the same time, you have to work with what you're being supplied as a striker, and he's not really being supplied with much. Whereas a lot of these goals we've had, Sam's kind of made on his own, but he's made those opportunities in the second half, like I said, running at tired legs. Mm-hmm. So it's just a dilemma I'm having right now. Well, I do think we start one of them. Who do you pick? And, you know, we kind of had this problem last year with Sam, where how do you tell him, this guy, you know, we're sitting you or we're not giving you that game time, when he's sitting there going, well, I'm the one putting the goals in right now.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. Because I do think, you know, we'll get into the game here in a little bit, probably pretty soon. But I do think there were a couple of chances. I mean, really a couple of chances away from, like, we're still in this tournament.
And
you,
that's,
you know?
Yeah.
And those two did almost link up. And so it's like, are we sitting here, if the shot that Sam takes in the 20s, so we'll just go into it, 27th minute, right? You had it's a vintage City performance here, because you had a turnover that went to Klaus. I mean, this looked like the first five games of the season a year ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this was everything that we had just saw. Klaus hits a little bit too heavy, and it was a through ball to Sam, but it got too far through, and Steve Clark was able to get, you know, out and cut out the angle. And then Adeniran, you know, obviously kicks it right on net and right at Steve Clark. So he makes the save. Now, if that ball's played like a fraction of an inch, you know, or a fraction of a second, I should say, a little sooner, or perhaps a little bit, you know, not as deep, that's probably a goal. And then you're like, well, hey, look at these two guys, right? And so, like, it's a what have you done for me now type of environment, as mm-hmm. most things are, and I get that. But I didn't feel like they were so out of sync this time. I thought they played worse together the last time they were out there. But these, like, at this point, I felt like they played pretty well at times anyway. I just don't know if Klaus is as good of a distributor of the ball as Sam is. I feel like if it were, like, the roles were reversed there, where Sam was distributing it to Klaus, it might have been a better situation.
Yeah, that's tough, because after that, I tried to count, and I can't really think of many other times that they did link up in that game. My issue is if they're on the field and Klaus isn't getting the ball, and you saw this really, Houston, and I saw a lot of people commenting on this, why is he going so deep? Why is he going so deep? And he's kind of, as a striker, you're thinking, what do I got to do to get the ball? We're not getting it up to this point. I'm going to go back to where the ball is so I can start getting on the ball. But the farther and farther he went back, Sam still stayed high, which meant that if we were looking for Sam, and I don't really understand what this offensive logic was, there was a lot of dump and run. And when your defense is, I relate it to, like, when in hockey, you're on a power play.
Mm-hmm.
You're just withstanding pressure. It's a lot more tiring when you're playing soccer to chase somebody than it is to lead somebody, because you know where you're going. When you're chasing somebody, you don't know where they're going.
Right.
You're just, and that's tiring. And so you look at the defense and they'd kick it out, but Sam wouldn't get on it. And then it's just right back down our throat. But the other issue is even if Sam did get on it, Klaus was so far back checking to the ball, it was him alone. Klaus wasn't up there. And so it's just, I don't know. It's so tough. I don't know how you play them currently. Until we get things going, I don't know how you currently play them at the same time. And unfortunately, I think with what would best suit us would be Klaus starting and trying to get something involved with the midfield and linking up like we saw him do a lot last season, and then bring Sam on with that sprint speed and everything on tired legs of a defense. But like I said, it's just, it's tough. And again, like you said, there were chances in this night to where, and I guess that's why I'm worried, but I'm not panicked. I'm trying to find the right term for it. I don't know if panic's the word. I'm concerned with what I'm seeing on the field and what I'm seeing out of City preseason up until these first three games. But I also know that we're fully capable of, you know, if we do click. Now, I do think this was maybe the worst game we had so far. But we're also, like you said, a couple actual finishes away from not even having this discussion.
I think that's the message that I want to convey is, like, I'm not an generally speaking, when it comes to sports, I'm not an optimist, you know, typically. I'm kind of a realist. I don't think play the role of pessimist, but I do think that there have been plenty of times, especially with the Cardinals, that I've been overly pessimistic lately, especially, right?
Right.
Like a lot of St. Louis has been. I don't know, looking at this, and this is me trying to tiptoe between maybe the three different personas there. I don't know if I'm necessarily pessimistic overall three games into the season, mm-hmm. because looking at the lineup that was trotted out on Tuesday night was not what you're going to be seeing at City Park against New York City FC on Saturday night.
Right.
And knowing that, knowing you're one game into the season and you've got a point, right? You didn't lose the game at RSL, thankfully, to Sam. Mm-hmm. They didn't play great, that's for sure, yeah. But it's not, you know, it wasn't a loss, right? You came away with a point anyway, and those points, as we know, are precious, especially as you get towards the end of the season. And City didn't have a lot of draws last year, and you think yeah. about the difference between how some of those points race ended up shaking up. You know, like, if you would have grabbed a couple instead of having a loss or two, you would have ended up in even more points than they had already generated, and had even more of a separation between first and second place. But going back to it, I don't know if I can look at that and say and be as pessimistic as a lot of the fan page is right now. And I think fans have every right to critique as much as you possibly want. I mean, especially if you're a paying fan and you're yeah. going down to City Park and you're buying merch and you're buying food and you're buying beers and you're buying tickets. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of dollars in an evening, you know, if not more, if you have a family that's going to be there in attendance. You absolutely have the right to say whatever you'd like. My word of caution would be is, like, look, it's still very early, mm-hmm. and people will point back and say, well, yeah, they're 5 out of their last 18 or whatever it is, you know, dating back to last season, including the MLS and maybe other competitions or whatever it may be. Yeah, there's been certainly been a bit of a slide. I'm not knocking that, but I think being as pessimistic when you think about, like, the lineup that was put out on Tuesday night, I don't believe is indicative of what this team will be moving forward. And it's not. You don't have Leuven. You don't have Parker. You know, I mean, Rasmus Alm still hasn't stepped on the field yet. Yeah. So there is going to be an uplift, and there is a better team that this squad can put out than what we saw Tuesday night.
One thing I do love about it, you know, if people are on there and they're expressing their, you know, concerns, anything towards it that, you know, is a true feeling that they have, I'm all for it, because that shows me passion. How many times have I been at City Park and we've been up 3-0 and we gave in a goal and I've turned to you and I've been like, this effing team,
yeah,
they're driving me nuts.
And
it's just there's passion there, and you care.
I love it. I said it last week. Yeah. I thrive off your passion, Eric.
And my issue is, and maybe we got spoiled last year with, you know, going undefeated in the first 5 games, is there's this sense of, had we not gone, you know, undefeated again, that this team's done for. And while we all expected a little bit of backslide from the, you know, craziness of last season, we got a long season to go. And so for 3 games in, while we haven't played well at, you know, by any means, I'm not defending the play so far, I can't defend people getting on there going, this team's done.
Yeah.
Or I'm out. Because if you're out now, don't come back, you know, the Fairweather fan or whatever when they start winning. Yeah, I love the passion, seeing people express their, you know, their desire. You know, I mean, we, as somebody who's been, you know, fan of this sport for so long, I enjoy seeing other people take on that passion that I've expressed for years and years. And it means a lot to me, especially being in my own town. And so I love it, but we got to also be a little bit realistic with that passion and saying this team's done now when we know if we can get things rolling, like we know this team is capable of doing, we're not far away from, you know, and, you know, I'm not trying to defend it, but we're also dealing with some injury stuff, which a lot of teams are as well. So there's no excuse there. But to say we're done, I think is a bit of an overstatement. Three games in, we addressed it last episode as well on the South End submission, is like, where do we need to hold, you know, to improve? And we were saying it's very early to tell on that. It's the same with how's this team going to go the rest of the season. It's very early to tell. While like we said, it's not rolling by any means, and there's a lot that needs to be addressed and fixed. We know that with, especially at City Park coming up this weekend, this team, if they can get back to getting things clicking, is not far off.
One other thing on this. You've played three games at this point, two Champions Cup games and an MLS game, and you're 1-1-1, right? Mm-hmm. Taking the win out of it, and even taking really this loss out of it, because again, that just wasn't, as far as play on the field goes.
And as well, in three games, giving up three goals.
Three goals, right, right. So defensively, it's been really good. But if you're really that worried or concerned, I would suggest people go take a look at the scores from last Saturday night on February 24th, I think it was, for teams that had played in the CONCACAF Champions Cup earlier that week. They didn't score very much. They almost all drew or lost. I think
0-1-5.
0-1-5. There you go. So that's the line from that particular game. So when you think about, as a fan, and you're like, man, I don't like the product, I promise you, every other team that is their fan base that is currently in the CONCACAF Champions Cup has felt the same way around MLS competition. Now, I can't defend what was on the field on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
But they did grab a win in this competition, okay? So that's a plus. They didn't play very well in the U.S. Open Cup. They only had a win against Union Omaha last year in that. So I think this is a bit of a step up in that regard, because you did beat an MLS team and a pretty good MLS team in Houston as well. You lost a game that you didn't have a very good lineup or a very strong lineup compared to what we've seen in the past and some of the names that we know that were on the bench for that game. And then the MLS game you played, you tied 1-1. In a weekend where nobody performed at all that played in the CONCACAF Champions Cup a few days before.
Mm-hmm. Or another two examples, definitely look at that, but also look at last season. You look at LAFC, who made a run in the Champions Cup and struggled in the league for the first half of the season, and then they turned their season around once they were bounced out of that. And another great example, and you know, we don't want to give them too much credit over here, but like, you look at SKC's start of their season last year. What, they go winless their first, what, 9?
Yeah, it was
11
bad.
Games.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and make the playoffs, get hot towards the end of the season, and bounce us out. So it's still, you know, while we would have still, for this reason, loved that they maybe prioritized the Champions Cup a little bit more, because we still have, you know, 33 games for the league to get on a run, get things figured out, get back to what we know is working from last season, and get back to what we know St. Louis City can be.
Yeah, I agree. Look, we've spent so much time on this one topic. We haven't even really got into the game yet. We talked about what took place in the 27th minute. I want to ask, before we dive into it too much, did you have a guess on the attendance in that game?
I think I saw it, actually, so that might ruin it, but wasn't it only like 6,000?
5,077 in a stadium that holds 22,000.
And again, I'll give credit again to City. You know, Houston's known as being a pretty good fan base as well.
And it's a huge city. I mean, you could fit several St. Louis's inside of Houston.
And I remember we were almost bummed about that first Houston game where we missed, what, 1,500 seats, you said? Like, where something like that was open. I mean, there were a lot more than 1,500 seats open there. So, but again, that's almost more frustrating as well, thinking like there wasn't really a way crowd to have to deal with. You know, it's not like they were being...
They showed two City fans that were sitting there at the end of the game.
For those guys. They looked like they were going through it, as we all were.
Oh, man. I know. The other, there's a couple, I can't think of their names now, but there's a couple that always pop up on the City fan page, and they live in Houston. And
so yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. I thought they lived there, but yeah, I see them all the time and see, you know, obviously for them.
So there were at least four there.
I actually remember seeing them at City Park for the home opener as well. Yep, and it's so funny, like, now seeing people consistently on the socials and walking around. You don't know their name or you don't know anything, but yeah. You're like, I know, I've seen that guy all the time.
Developed a little rapport with them. It's pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to point out too, and I am so thankful for this, is that we don't have horns playing at City Park.
Well, we do now.
Oh my God. You're kidding me.
They added them. Yeah.
You are kidding me.
But to our credit, I feel like the drums still are the prominent feature of the instruments, but they're a little bit more, not as, I don't know the proper way to say this, but they just sound better. We'll just say that.
Drums?
No, the horns.
The horns.
They've added the Florida Noise added a few horns this year. The drums are still the primarily
Did
sound
they have
that comes
them in,
out.
In Salt, at Salt Lake?
Yeah.
I didn't hear them.
Yeah. That's the point. Okay. They accompany the rest of the sound. They are not the sound.
That was brutal, I thought, listening to that.
It just sounded like they gave, you know, like, we at City Park passed around flags.
Yeah.
It sounded like they just passed around horns. Yeah. And were like, you blow on this for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hated it. I didn't like it at all. It was very reminiscent of like the 2010 World Cup in South Africa with the Vuvuzelas. Oh my goodness.
I loved it. I loved the Vuvuzelas.
My God. One highlight from this game was Roman Berkey. In the defense as a whole, but Berkey, I thought, played really well at times. These saves that he made in the 33rd minute were,
you know what's amazing?
Charts, dude.
Is no matter what the lineup is that is trotted out, when you still see Berkey's name on the sheet, you just always feel like you're still in it.
Yeah. Well, you were.
We could literally put out our next pro team, and I just still would feel like if Berkey was in there, like, I'd still have this thought of like, well, maybe we'll catch him here or there, but at least Berkey will keep us in it. And he does. And he did all last season, but especially that night.
Well, the shot that Jan Gregis hit from outside the box.
Yeah.
The diving save to his right. And then immediately getting up and getting that rebound that was taken from Kowalczyk from point blank range for another.
Like,
just back to back saves. Like, yeah, that was like right on the chest or stomach. Yeah.
I think he got the wind knocked out of him.
Yeah, you could see his face. But I mean, God, what an amazing performance in that little, just that little stretch that took place there.
What I find so impressive with Berkey is, and it's seeing it so close on the south end as well, is when you make those dives where you're holding out just a single hand, you have to be so strong with that hand. Like, that hand can't give or anything like that. And on this first shot, you see that, this dive out to his right, but that hand goes nowhere when he makes that save and spills out. And unfortunately, you know, Houston's the first to react to it, which was kind of the theme on the rest of the night. But he's back up in position. He gets himself out there and he takes one for the team, blocking it. And I mean, MLS, City, everybody was all over it saying there's a reason that this guy was goalkeeper of the year last year, not just from his save making ability, but just the consistent awareness to, you can't celebrate a great save. You got to still be in position and put yourself there. And again, he took one for the team, because I know for me, like, when I see those, goalies are just crazy and insane. I think your wife said she played goalie, and I was just like,
it makes a lot of sense.
A psycho, man. Yeah. I was like, you're a psychopath. And I feel like, as much as we say Parker and all those are defenders going in on headers, I feel like goalies are just as much psychopaths.
Yeah, I mean, they're totally exposed a lot of times. And, you know, looking at the ball and not always paying attention to who's running in front of them. There's a lot of bad collisions that have taken place from that, for sure. But I mean, look, the guy is already putting together quite a 2024 highlight reel with some of the saves he's made.
I saw somebody say, like, he's in mid-season form in already, which is great to know.
Yeah.
You know, while maybe the rest of the team hasn't, you know, gotten to that level yet, who was a big reason for us last year, is picking up right where he left off.
Yeah, yeah. Outside of Berkey, I thought the defense played well. The Shaquille Watts slide tackle in extra time in the first half to keep it 0-0 was nice as well. He kind of came out of nowhere. He's played really well in his limited duty here this year as well. I liked him last year, but this play that he made to keep that the score scoreless, going into the half was really nice.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, a mistake by Nowitzki kind of gives them the ball, and it looks all but sure, just at least a clear shot on goal. But credit to Watts not giving up on the play, showing that just aggression, that effort to get back, and a stellar play by him. So keeps us level. Unfortunately, right before that, and especially with all the confusion going on, I mean, here we go again getting hit with Nilsson being subbed out for Mechanic. Apparently it was his glute hamstring. It seems like Carnell says it's similar to the Parker situation where it just felt tightness, didn't feel right. So that's why it was precautionary. They said they were going to try and get him to half, but he just felt like it was better for him coming off there. So, man, we're getting really hit hard with the center back positioning. So for all that confusion there on, you know, defense and what's going on, for him to kind of still stay consistent and make that, you know, come back and dive and stay on the play, it was great to see. Great effort from Watt. Hey, if you're a coffee lover like me, then you've got to try some of the best local coffee there is from Postal Coffee. Will over at Postal Coffee is super passionate about his roasting process, and it really shows in every bag. Every small batch is made to order from small visited sustainable farms, so you really get that great flavor and get that care in every order. Also, 20% of all profit goes to veteran suicide prevention. So not only are you getting a great tasting product, but you're supporting a great cause as well. And if you use the code SOUTHEND at checkout, you'll receive 15% off your entire first order. Nothing goes better to start your day than a new episode of SOUTHEND Supporters and a cup of Postal Coffee. So check them out on their Instagram at Postal Coffee Co. and check out their website at postalcoffeeco.com.
Yeah, it was, and that's something, again, that you're going to need, especially with the issues at center back there, just the strong defense. Wenzel is that guy at this point, for me anyway.
He played great.
He played great, and if there is someone that needs to step in for Parker or Nielsen or whomever else, right, if Yarrow takes another shot to the dome next week, he's a guy that I think can potentially fill in. Played really, really well that 55th minute. That slide tackle he made right outside or right inside the box, I guess it was, perfectly timed. That's one of those things where if you don't time it right, I mean, you might be giving up a penalty.
Oh, man.
And just so much confidence that he had to get in there and make the play.
Yeah, you saw the physicality that he brings to the team and to his game. He didn't look, while he did give up a couple fouls here and there, but he didn't look hesitant. And I think that was something that really also impressed me on the night. Is when you get a City 2 player who gets that call up, the loan call and everything going on, you don't want them to be hesitant. You want them to take that opportunity and run with it. And I felt like he did. I felt like I said, other than Berkey, I think he was maybe our best player on the night. He just was physical. He made great tackles when he needed to. I don't really, you know, as much as that was a makeshift defense, I feel like the defense wasn't the issue on the night. And so
yeah,
I think
for sure
they were just withstanding so much pressure all throughout. So credit to him for stepping up to the chance that he got. And I know people were kind of rumbling today, I guess on the app even, they moved him from the City 2 roster to the City roster.
Okay.
So who knows, maybe he earned a future City contract moving himself up. He's a leader for City 2. He definitely showed that he can handle himself at the top level. So like we talked about, we want to see these guys when they get this chance, whether you're sub, whether you're regular, whatever it is, when you get on that field, you take advantage of it to the fullest. And I really felt like he did it that night.
I thought so, too. I thought he played really well, not just that play, but just all in all. Again, defensively, I think it was a pretty good performance from the back four to Berkey. It definitely wasn't the issues at all. And I mean, honestly, like, I'm not really sure if it was the two up top either. I mean, I definitely think they had some chances. He had the counterattack where Sam stayed on in the 55th as well. It's kind of all happened like right after one another.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off of that play that Wenzel made, Sam goes to get a shot off, but then it was interrupted there. You had a slide tackle come in to make a play on that ball. I thought the forwards, you know, with that one especially and some others, that they played all right. I just didn't think the distribution was great again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Durkin played all right. Kojima, he kind of, you know, he's still getting up to speed with the team and everything there. Oshrock, man, that's one that just baffles me. He has so much talent. We hear so much promise from him. I just can't. there was a couple times throughout the game where he got on breaks, and the instance with Sam when that shot was blocked in the first half, I felt like he should have shot there, but you could tell he's in his head on what to do. A couple crosses where he waited a little bit too late to make the cross on the dribble in. It just wasn't working for him. And Indy, while it was definitely not knocking any effort, there just wasn't as much production following that effort on the night. So when you have a defense that's just withstanding pressure all night, a midfield that can't keep the ball or distribute the ball to the forwards, and the forwards being real limited on what their chances are, dump and run or just bad balls in, it just looked really off that night. And the big thing I noticed, kind of was thinking, that popped into my head is this looks like there was a lot of miscommunication on the night as far as passes, thinking there's runs there, thinking there's not. And while I know it's also credit to, you know, the massive amount of rotation, I think, but it just looked like a lot of mistakes that you would see from the expansion team, like you would expect last year, where these guys are just getting familiar with themselves. While there was a lot of rotation, a lot of new faces, you wouldn't think that this would be happening in year two. Balls being played in where you see the forwards going, oh, I thought you wanted me this way, I was going this way. Just a lot of errant passes that were happening that was just really confusing to me. And then the issue was when we did make those subs, I felt like they were a little bit late. I know that was something that people kind of harped on Carnell last year, was maybe making bigger changes at halftime.
Mm-hmm. He didn't do that very often.
And I feel like, you know, you bring in Leuven or even Celio, but an AZ, but they're limited time and you're kind of forced to make things happen quick, with, because you don't have the time. And Leuven's, I feel like, one of those players who just grows into the game, and you give him, I think it was like 20 minutes, that's just not enough time to make a massive impact when you're already withstanding a ton of pressure there. So it just felt like there were too many errant passes, too much miscommunication, and then when those subs were made, they felt this pressure to do so much in such a short amount of time. I know AZ, a lot of times it just looked like he was trying to do too much rather than get the ball away quick. He was trying to dribble a lot and just got caught up in the play. And I think maybe some of that was thinking like, I don't have much time to, we got to make an impact now. I'm going to try and do something here. And it just didn't work out on the night.
Yeah, it didn't. And at the end of the day, I mean, look, you're nothing going into the 60th minute, and it's just inevitable at this point. It just seemed like absorbing so much pressure just continued over and over and over and over again. When's it coming? When's it coming? When's it coming? And then it finally did on a long set piece. Opportunity was headed in to Daniel Sterry's, and then ultimately headed again and scored by Eric Svechinko. Okay. Boy, we were close there. Not that close. You're an L, but yeah. Svechinko. Yeah. There we go. I'm not going to even attempt it again, Eric. So I appreciate you going with that. Look, I mean, there it was. 1-0, and that's all it really, you know, took. But it was just a matter of time, I felt like, that they were going to get one.
Yeah, it was just such a bummer because it was just, you know, obviously you're withstanding pressure the whole night, but it was just kind of like a nothing fell at half. You're thinking, all right, let's just defend this and get out. And it's just a ball played in. Svechinko heads it down, and it's just he wins the ball and then the layoff to him, and it's just a quick one touch, and Berkey can't react in time. And that's the thing about this sport, is you can withstand so much, but within a split second, you're down.
Yeah.
1-0.
Yeah.
And we talked about last week the just kind of that dejection feeling, you know, going down to RSL. This one, it just really felt, when you're just withstanding pressure the whole time, and you feel, especially it was more the defenders, they look kind of like, guys, we've been just handling this all night and here we are giving this up now. And it just kind of was the theme on the night of just, we can only, that wall can only handle so much before there's a little crack in it, and once that little crack, it just expands, and it just felt like it was coming. And then I don't know, unfortunately, I don't know if it was the changes made or when they were made. It was tough for me this, and I'm normally one that feels like we're in it up until the 90th. For some reason, the way things were going that night, the play and everything that I was seeing on the field, I just, once that one went in, I just kind of felt like, there it is.
Yeah, I mean, there it was. That was about it. That was all that was really needed. I mean, City had another opportunity. The ball in the 88th that Klaus had chipped from outside the box, or the right side of the box. How close do you think that was?
I mean,
they didn't really have a good angle of it.
I remember, man, it was actually the South African World Cup with the Vuvuzelas and everything. I remember, oh, man, who was it? Maicon, their right back, Brazilian right back. I remember there was a ball played into the corner, and he was right on the line, like the end line, and he shoots it and actually goes near post. And I remember the announcers were all like, you know, normally we would think it was a mishit cross, but he's Brazilian, so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt that it was a shot. And it was the same on this situation. While I don't know if it was a cross
There's
or shot.
There's nobody there to cross
but
it.
But it's also like it, Klaus and that Brazilian, like maybe he was just so frustrated on the night. He's like, you know what? I know it's a weird angle, and I know this probably isn't the probability, but I'm going for it. And I don't think he was as far off as, I mean, even Steve Clark, I think, was kind of like, oh, that was, he was watching it go by, but I think part of him was like, oh, that was a little closer than I thought it was.
Yeah, they replayed it, and the announcer was talking about it, but they just didn't have a good angle on it. But I was curious about that, as to your thoughts on it. There's nobody that was there. I can't imagine he was crossing it.
And I don't really feel like there's, maybe Celio, but again, that Brazilian. I don't think there's anybody else on the team that would have attempted
would have tried
that
it.
Either. Yeah, so.
Maybe Leuven. I don't know if he was like given in the right spot.
Maybe.
But
maybe.
Now it was wild. Other than that, you had Berkey, another save in extra time. Jan Gregis had another opportunity after a long Kowalczyk run and crossed it into him. But another save by Berkey to keep it 1-0. So again, his performance on the night really was great. And we've said it so many times on this podcast, and just about everybody in the area has, is that very rarely in games where City loses can you blame the keeper.
Yeah, I mean, he exemplifies what you want as a captain. He's in it the whole way through. I felt like some of the subs, you know, you look for when you're praying the person style, they come in and they're just running gung-ho. I don't know if I really felt that as much this time. And he just, I mean, how many games last year can we say he kept us in it all the way through?
Yeah,
he just is. He's our leader. He is the reason that if we're in a game, it's typically because of Berkey. So even on our worst night, to think that, you know, we go down 1-0, I think a massive part of that is he's the guy between the sticks.
Yeah, well, 1-0, unfortunately, City drops this one. So again, they lose to Houston 2-2 on the aggregate because Houston scored an away goal and City did not. All they would have needed to have done was score a goal and they're
advancing. That was the thing keeping me going.
Yeah.
At 11:30 at night, I'm just thinking like a mishit, anything. Yeah, I'll take whatever it takes. Just put one in the back of that.
Yeah. Net. One thing I like to see is that Berkey came up on a corner. He was up way up there.
The dude's just back there thinking, I guess I'll do it all for you.
I mean, I like it. I said this last year. It's like there were times where it just didn't matter if you gave up another goal. You needed to get one.
It's a great point.
You
know, I mean,
so it's like
doesn't matter if you go 5-0 down, you're
right,
still out.
Right.
So
bring him up,
but
get as much
one
off
goal
as possible.
In, and we're on.
I know. So I kind of liked it. You know, it was reminiscent of what you see a lot of times in indoor soccer. A goalie will come way up, and of course hockey, where a goalie would just get removed completely, and you'll bring a fresh skater on.
I tell you what, he does score. Just me and you will start carving that statue. To
oh my God, I'm telling you, right outside of City Park. Tuesday night wasn't a complete loss for us. We had a good time before the game took place. We actually went over to Felix's Pizza Pub. We were invited as guests over there by Carmen Stone, who runs their marketing team and does a trivia night called Stoned Trivia, which is a play on her words and also a play on just being stoned in general. Which
may have been stoned.
Which I think is pretty common at Felix's, from my understanding. She's great. She was awesome. Jen, who was working alongside it too, did a really, really good job at the trivia, putting the things together. They fed us. We got to drink beers. The pizza was amazing,
oh,
dude.
I for sure. I actually heard it on the radio the other day. People, like somebody messaged in, like, where's your pizza spot within St. Louis? And I heard Felix's mentioned before we even went there. Without a doubt, that place is my pizza go-to if you were in the St. Louis area.
It's unbelievable.
And not just the pizza. Those wings, those
wings
Asian wings, they kept telling us, like, you know, and typically when I go wings, I go, if I see like an Asian zing or an Asian spice or something along that realm, I go for it. And she was like, I suggest these for you. They were phenomenal. You get that crisp, but you still get like the chewiness of the, everything there. And I tell you what, like, I love that they're pizza by the slice, but you almost got to be cautious that you don't go too many orders on those slices, because those suckers were massive.
I don't think I could eat two slices. They're humongous. I mean, it's like, it looks like a half a pizza.
I think if you were to cut it, I'd say it's close to three slices per piece.
It's big, dude.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I can't remember the exact name of the menu, but they said it's basically like their meat lovers.
Yeah.
And you asked me how it was, and I just was housing it. Like, yeah. It was one of those, like, when the waiter comes over and you got a mouthful of food, however's everything, I was in love.
Yeah, I went with the buffalo chicken. That's why I didn't eat one of the buffalo chicken wings. I was full from the pizza, and I had eaten dinner before I got there, too. I wasn't expecting this. She's like, you got to try the pizza. So I got buffalo chicken pizza, which is, that's a go-to for me. I love it.
Is it?
Yeah, it had the blue cheese crumbles on it and, like, chives
and
everything.
It looked fantastic.
Super good. I tried to use a fork to cut it at first, and Jen made fun of me.
Yeah, she gave you a
lot for that. So I went ahead and I manned up, and I took bites of it and ended up folding it up. But it's so big, and my hands are kind of little, so it's hard to even fit in that, you know? So
it is an in-between, like, do I fold this thing? Do I cut it?
It's
like,
half a medium pizza. Like, it's humongous.
But what's amazing with that pizza is, like, normally, typically slices that big are, like, floppy.
It wasn't
just sloppy mess. Like,
yeah.
It was solid all the way through. I mean, I can't wait to go back.
No,
honestly,
I know.
It
really
was
good.
And they said, hey, they show every city game, and city gets rights over the sound throughout the place, and it was just a cool spot. Like, the trivia was cool.
It's packed in there too.
I loved the team names.
Yeah.
I love their energy. I love the questions that were kind of like, I thought they were like, there, no matter what level of trivia you are, I feel like you could easily grab a team and just go have a great time there.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. The event was really well put on. They do it every Tuesday night, that trivia, and Carmen and Jen run it together. So, I would encourage you to go out, check it out. I mean, get there early because you're going to need to get a seat.
Early and get creative with your team name.
Yes, get creative, because they give out prizes for the spiritiest award, which we gave out for this one. So.
Which was super fun to do, yeah. So my tip for you, if you are trying to win that spirit award, be loud and be creative.
Be loud and be creative and enjoy really, really, really good pizza. Super good. Felix's Pizza Pub. Check them out in Dogtown. I will say, turning our attention forward towards this weekend, March 2nd, 7:30 p.m., we've got MLS action back at City Park against New York City FC, an unfamiliar foe. We haven't seen them yet, as we're kind of making the tour now through the rest of the Eastern Conference that we didn't get a chance to see last year. New York City FC comes in. They lost last week, so they have one loss in as many games this season in MLS. They haven't been in any outside competitions. They didn't qualify for CONCACAF Champions Cup. So far, just one loss in one game, whereas City's 1-1-1-3 now. They lost to Charlotte 1-0 in Charlotte, so another away game for them. This is a team that doesn't particularly play well on the road as it is, Eric.
Yeah, I would say, you know, kind of like we touched on earlier in the episode, you know, not to panic or anything like that. To me, this is really going to be a defining game of where are we going from here? What, you know, is this team taking this personally about their performances and how it's been on the field, as well as the coaching staff and everything? Because this, like we said, this New York FC, while they're a dangerous team, they don't particularly travel that well. I think they were fifth worst in the league last year as far as away games. I think they have like one win in their last six or seven away games. This is dating back to last year. So they don't exactly do well on the road, and especially they haven't seen anything like City Park yet. They typically, from towards the end of last season as well as what they've run so far, it's kind of been like a 4-2-3-1 or even like a 4-3-3. So that kind of, you know, fits the same style that we play, but they're the complete opposite of us. They love the long game. They possess the ball similar to Houston, where they'll try and almost lull you to sleep with possession and then catch you on like a quick build-up play and catch you off your marking. So my keys to the game going into this are, we have to figure out our midfield situation. We have to get our forwards involved in that to be dangerous offensively. I think we've performed pretty well defensively so far this year, so getting that figured out in the midfield is going to be strong, because where NYCFC is strong is in their midfield. Their wing play as well as their center mids are kind of where their team ticks. So if we can be just as strong going against them, I think is going to be our big factor on how that game goes on that night, especially because we won't have much of the ball. And we haven't really had much of the ball all year. While that's not our game plan, kind of like we touched on last week, and then what we really noticed against Houston as well, we have to up this pass accuracy. We have to get clicking and be on the same page from Berkey all the way up to whoever's starting up top. My thought process going into this game, and just from the lineup that we trotted back out last week, I think we go back to that 4-2-3-1 system. My prediction for like a starting lineup is I think Totlin comes back in. He's been phenomenal for us. I think it was just maybe a load management deal as far as this week or Tuesday. I kind of wish we would have went strong, but I think Totlin's in. From what everything I'm seeing and hearing, Parker and Yarrow should be good to go. If anything, Yarrow's a little bit less likely in that situation. So, emergency, you throw in Nowitzki. I don't know if we use Vetzel again, unless he gets a pro contract, which I, again, saw that he was switched to, City on the... So we'll see on that aspect. But I expect Parker and Yarrow back in. And my biggest confusion throughout this whole season is, where's Dur been? Why have we not seen Dur getting any starting? Is it fitness? Is it just him getting familiar with the team? We made a big signing on him. Why haven't we really seen him much? But I thought we were going to see him Tuesday. So I'm thinking if we didn't see him Tuesday, we're going to see him Saturday. So I got Dur playing in there. As far as the midfield goes, again, just based off what we saw in that last game, I think Leuven and Blom come back in, get those two running again. While I'd like to see finally this connection of Leuven and Durkin, I think Durkin's been running, so I think we go back to Blom, the fact that Blom was rested. So Leuven and Blom in the midfield. And then I'm going to go, I think Thorsen, AZ, and Celio, I think, get the start, again, based off like subs and who was rested last week. And then I'm going to go Klaus up top and Sam coming in, like I talked about, with that energy in the second half. I think we have to get a result in this game, not just for like the fans' sake or anything like that, but I just think for City's own confidence within themselves, a team that doesn't travel well on the road, let's get back to what we found worked pretty well for us last season, get guys that are still trying to get up to speed in form on this game, and then finish them out with strong subs coming off the bench that run like crazy, like Indy, like Sam.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think that I feel like Klaus's day as a striker, let's say that starting striker, I should say, let's say Klaus goes out and doesn't perform well in this game and Sam comes in and performs really well again. I mean, you could see that potentially reverse or flip-flopped in the future. So this is big for Klaus. I think
so.
Klaus needs to look at it that way. I think it's not the days anymore of him being the guy and the only guy. And he's had plenty of opportunity, I think, to go out and really perform. So here's a situation coming back home, like with a lot of the fan base, I think, much more interested in seeing Sam out there at this point. Mm-hmm. He's got a chance to rise up and kind of silence the critics. And so like, go do it,
Yeah, I mean, we've said kind of all along what makes, every player better, but that competition within the team. And right now, Klaus has got some strong competition, and he should kind of be really realizing, we don't ever want any of our players ever thinking their position is secure. And I think Klaus is maybe feeling that a little bit of pressure when you have somebody else putting the balls in the back of the net.
100%. I've got a buddy that's a big New York City FC fan, by the way.
Really?
From New York. Yeah, I met him when I worked with him when I was in Florida, but he's from New York. I got to talk to him about this, I guess. Bobby Dane is his name. Dude, you want to talk about it? You think I'm a degenerate? This guy is a degenerate, brother. I'm telling you.
Speaking of which, do you know what the lines are?
I do know what the lines are, Eric. What do you think the lines are?
I would imagine we still have to be favored, but I'm thinking with the performance they're seeing so far, it's a slight favorite.
It's a slight favorite. Are you looking at these lines?
No. I'm looking at it like we always talk about. I always feel like my team has a chance to win. Mm-hmm. Anytime I do the guess the score on the City, I've never once guessed City to lose, even when maybe deep down in my side I've thought like this will be a tough game for us. I I struggle. I just always feel like, and especially knowing what we're capable of, and same with other teams I support, I just know what we're capable of. And I know what City Park can bring, but I know they're also looking at the way we've performed so far. But I'm just taking into consideration what they maybe also think New York City. It'll be the tale of two cities going into this game. But what they've been like on the road.
One thing that that I will say that I've learned in my time betting the sport is that it's hard to be a home team underdog. Very hard.
Yeah.
Like most home, I mean, it is, even you think about the other night in Houston, 5,000 people there, and Houston was still a pretty comfortable favorite.
Yeah.
Whereas City was favored at home. It just, it's hard to get favored, I think, on the road in the sport. City is favored. They're plus 130 on the three-way money line. So it's, I mean, it's close. They're like one, like City's, New York City's like 180 or something. And then on a draw, no bet option, City's a minus 140. When I say City, I mean St. Louis, of course.
Yeah, we're going to have to almost like
tough.
The good side, the red side.
The red side. Yeah, you've got this like Man City color scheme coming in, right?
Oh, yeah. They're like, I think they're like a sister branch off of the whole umbrella. You'll that's
love
under
this
it.
Then.
I think, which is funny because Diego Mirgliani, our president now, I think was part of that whole umbrella. So
yeah, I think so.
I mean, technically, he's going up against his old, you know, side, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
weird. All right.
You know, yeah, we'll go. The red side's always a good side.
Gonna need a W Saturday night. I mean, it's important for, like you said, not just the fans, but the players to get that confidence and that swag back, man. Just seeing Sam score that goal the other night and then hearing the Bad Boys 2 song come on, the Shake Your Tail Feather, you know, just that's what everybody misses. More of that. We want to hear that song a few times on Saturday, I think.
100%. Especially like us older guys. Yeah. Like, bring it back to our music.
I know,
generation.
Man. Just bring, it brings you back a little bit. A bit nostalgic. The refs got together. The pro refs got together and are working on coming to some sort of an agreement. They're not there yet. So it sounds like another week of replacement refs, correct?
Yeah. They met, I believe it was today, and it just sounds like they're still not on the same page. Somebody tweeted out that they met today. The PSRA and the pro met today alongside federal mediators. The PSRA made a proposal. Pro rejected it. So it looks like at least another week of replacement refs, which, hey, so far they weren't the story of the last week. So, you know, we'll hope that they can continue that reputation going into this week.
Definitely. What else you got for us, Eric?
So one other cool thing that was announced the other day is City made a partnership with Channel 4, so First Alert 4, for a segment called Extra Time, which will be on Friday nights at 6:45 to 7 p.m., a little 15-minute segment. It says they're thrilled to announce that they will be partnering with First Alert 4. It's going to be a little inside where you'll see behind the scenes, additional stories about the players, what they do to make the fans proud. It's going to be exclusive interviews, coaches, front office staff, previews of upcoming matches, game analysis, and news about the clubs, many off-field communities. So at the end of the day, it's just another cool thing that City has put in place to help get the exposure out there, grow the sport, and just get, you know, like we talked about, you know, giving people more information on the team, more information about the history of the competitions that they're in, anything like that. This just sounds like a cool little 15-minute segment. Another thing that I saw kind of throughout the socials this week is the disappointment in the lack of City coverage, whether it's the radio or TV.
Right.
Here's another little step that City's got going forward that will just, even if it's a little 15-minute spurt, it's something in the right direction for continuing to build the sport as well as the team in the city. So cool thing.
Well, I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, Eric, that are continuing to do those two things right there, including this one. So if you're getting tired of the local media coverage, not covering City, there's plenty of options for you to go out and listen, including Southland Sports. If it's us you choose to listen to, we're very happy with
that. Very, very appreciate.
But we're not the only game in town. There's plenty of other good ones that exist out there. So obviously, you do not have to drive around listening to terrestrial radio anymore. You've got your phone with you. You can podcast, whatever it may be. And there's plenty of good options here locally. Eric, where can people follow us?
Yeah, follow us on all our socials. On Instagram, we're Southend Supporters. Our Twitter is capital SES underscore podcast SEL. And then follow us on all things South End Supporters for our Facebook page. And as well, if you give us a listen, we'd really appreciate it if you give us a little review and let us know how we're doing. And also make sure on all those socials you send in your South End submission. Ask us any questions that we would love to answer on the show.
Another episode in the books. Want to say thank you so much to RPR Renovations and Postal Coffee Company for continuing to support this show, allowing us to do what we do. Please remember to go to postalcoffeeco.com, type in code SOUTHEND to get 15% off that first order of coffee. Thank you so much for listening. For Eric Cole, this is David Heck. You've been listening to South End Supporters. We'll see you next week. And until then, let's go City.